not to know that Yom Shlishi L'Parsh B'Shalach is the ultimate segula. The Hiyisim Li Segula Mikol Ha'amim. Okay, the ultimate segula. The truth is, though, Yishto, I didn't get anything. I don't know what happened. I didn't really get to an email. Maybe you all got a lot. Everyone got a lot of emails? You got emails? I think they overkilled it. I think they abused it so much, the skula, that people already calmed down. They already settled down because, you know why? It doesn't work. I think the secret is out. Okay, so I think the secret is out. So you don't hear people. I don't know. This year, I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear anything. It used to be a very big deal. There were signs and this. People, I think, already calmed down. They calmed down. Baruch Hashem. The truth is, what is the school? What is this thing all about? There was a legend from Rav Menachem Mendel Mirimanov. Rav Menachem Mirimanov was one of the four students of Rabbi Eliezer Milizhensk. You always hear people going to Lizhensk, to the very holy Rabbi Eliezer. He had four primary students, four main students, and Rav Menachem Mendel Mirimanov was one of them. It is undisputed that Rav Menachem El Mirimanov was a very holy, holy person. He lived his life in dire poverty to an extreme. And yet, and for 22 years, he expounded upon this Parashas Haman. He taught and it's not the right word, but he was obsessed with the Parashas Haman. He wrote a lot, it's written over in his name a lot. In fact, my uncle actually hired my uncle to translate one of his sfarim, one of the sfarim of Menachem El Mirimanov. It was published by Kitav, this thick. It's a very thick sefer. He was paid to translate it, and it was many, many years ago. I don't see it around the sefer. I don't see it. And he did not translate. He only translated certain sections because a lot of it is Kabbalistic, which is basically impossible to understand, possible to certainly translate. So Rav Menachem Mendel Mirimanov, he for 22 years, he darshened about the Mon, and the legend, I really don't know much about it, but the legend is that he was a very great source of parnasa for many people. He gave them blessings by learning his chidushim. Yeah, at least. I'm really not well familiar with the history. There is a legend, and the legend already has been proven to be. I once wrote right up. I can't say false. It seems that it's not accurate. This what they say is that Rabbi Menachem El Mirimanov said that on Yom Gimel LeParshas B'Shalach. Parsh B'Shalach is the parsha of the month on Tuesday. If you read the parsha Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, it's basically a segula for parnasa. Or it's really the words are not for parnasa. It's that your parnasa will not diminish. You will not. I think the segula really is you won't lose your job. It doesn't say you're going to get money. You're going to become rich. It means that you're not going to be mimayit. You're not going to lose money. Doesn't necessarily say that you're going to gain money, but at least you're not going to lose your parnasa. So somehow, this is what it says. The third day of Parshas B'Shalach, which is today, a person should read the parsha of the Mon, Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, and that will be some type of merit for the person that his parnasa should not be diminished. I don't believe it's written that the parnasa will increase, but at least it will not be diminished. So this turned into a big craze. So a lot of people did some research, and it seems that this is not accurate. It's not accurate. Rabbi Menachem El Mirimanov never said this. Rabbi Menachem El Mirimanov, he basically said that a person should say Shnayim Mikro, should say it every single day. And that's not a chiddush. That's in Shulchan Aruch, it says that. That's already it's a good thing to do. It's not only from him. This is already an old thing. Parshas Hayira, Parshas Teshuva, Parshas Amon. And it seems that it wasn't exactly, he didn't say it, someone, his grandson said it, or someone else, one of his Talmidim said it. And it went, it took on a life of itself. And this became a minhag that on Yom Gimel, Parshas Beshalach, to say Shnayim Mikra V'Echo Targum, and it will be a merit for a person that his parnasa at least should not be diminished. Maybe he'll get lucky, he'll win the lottery, he'll do very well. Again, it's been
613.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is 613 million. So this is a legend. This is, and again, research has shown that he never said this. It's someone misinterpreted something that he said. And again, people, don't confuse us with the facts. And people want to do what they want to do. You want to say, Hanach lechem li yisholem, enem nevim b'nei nevim? Okay. We've never heard anyone say, attribute their success because I said Parsha Samon on Yom Gimel. Never. You've never, ever, you show me someone in this world who became successful and attributes his success because he said the Parsha Samon Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum on Yom Gimel. You've never heard such a thing. Never. I never even heard someone say they became successful because they were a tzaddik. Even that you never heard. So certainly you've never heard something like this. All right, it is what it is. Now, the truth is, a person should really say the Parsha Samon every single day. What's the purpose of saying the Parsha every single day? Obviously, it reminds us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the provider. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided Klal Yisrael in the desert 40 years, traveled in the desert. We can't even be masig what it means to travel in the desert. What the conditions, the conditions are, L'chayra, the desert, as the Saudi Arabian desert, the conditions there are just impossible to survive. It's just an endless land of sand. There are sandstorms, there are dangerous creatures, this heat that is oppressive. It is beyond belief how Klal Yisrael, a nation of 3 million people, could survive in such an environment for 40 years. Would he have food? Would he have water? And Hashem provided for them. And it is a lesson in Emunah. And by dwelling upon this, and every single day dwelling upon this and focusing upon this, it reminds a person that no matter what situation you find yourself in today, and no matter how many bills you have to pay and how many difficulties you have and inflation and this and this and this, this is a far cry from what Klal Yisrael had to deal with when they were in the desert for 40 years, and yet they survived. And therefore, it's a Musa Haskel to have Emun and Hashem to survive as well. So just so that I wanted to, let's just go through a couple of things about short things, and maybe we have time, I'll do something a little bit longer about the mantras, just to touch upon some things in honor of today being Yom Shlishi L'Parash B'Shalach. Share with you just to touch again some basic yisoidos in the mon, in honor of Rabbi Nachman Milimanov, his Rebbe, Rebbe Eliezer Milizhensk, and all of the things that are associated with the day. I wrote down some notes over here. Okay, let's just first thing over here, some basic ideas about the mon. The mon, we know, you had to have the mon had no taste. Well, there's a very famous zvar from the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim says, we know that Chazal tell us that the mon had every flavor you can possibly want. A person was presented with the mon. What did it taste like? What did the mon taste like? So the answer is, whatever you want. A person had a machash. I wanted to taste like meat. It tasted like meat. I wanted to taste like bread. It tasted like bread. I wanted to taste like cake. It tasted like cake. Whatever you wanted, it tasted like. Except there were five things. It did not taste like melons. Okay, the kishuim. Okay, the Torah enumerates onions and melons, there are certain things that it did not taste like. The reason why it did not taste like these things was because it says, Zocharnu es hadogo, asher nochal b'mitzrayim chinam v'yes hakishum yadluim. There were a couple of things that it did not taste like. And Chazal tell us the reason why it did not taste like these things was because these things were dangerous. They were harmful, especially for women. For Nashim that were pregnant, they were harmful. And therefore Hashem did not want them to be harmed. So therefore, even if you tried that it should taste like these types of melons, it did not work. It did not have that taste. The Chofetz Chaim asks the question, what happens if a person did not have kavana, did not think? You know the old joke? The old joke is my version of the joke. There are four stages in life. When you're very, very young, you're worried, what are people going to think of you? Right? You're worried, what are they going to think of me? Then you get a little bit older, and what do you say? You become a little rebellious. I don't care what they think of me. Then you get a little bit older, and you come to realize, hey, you know what? They're not thinking about me. They're thinking about other things. And then you get older, the fourth stage in life, and you come to realize, guess what? They're not thinking, period. There's no brain activity going on. The four stages, this is my version of this, this is not the typical example. Four stages. I'm worried, what will they think? I don't care what they think. They're not thinking about me. They're not thinking, period. Chofetz Chaim, yes, what happens if the person has man and doesn't think? You don't think. I pick up a piece of man and I make a bracha. And I have no kavana. What did the man taste like? Nothing. Tasteless. Why? And the Chofetz Chaim says, "What? This is the Musa Haska. The man is a davar ruchni. If you go to shul and you daven, and you don't think, the davening is tasteless. If you open a daf gemara and you don't apply yourself to really understand what it means, it's tasteless. Any you do chesed." And you don't apply yourself to really involve yourself in what you're doing, it's tasteless. And when it's tasteless, you're not going to do it again. You're going to get burnt out. It's not going to have any value. Because anything spiritual in this world is just another example of man. The man is lechem in hashamayim. When you learn a daf gemara, you daven, you do something, it is a religious experience that is meant to give you satisfaction. And the satisfaction comes in the flavor. But if you have no kavana, it's tasteless. Just like the man can taste whatever you want it to taste like, but you have to apply yourself and have that kavana. And if you don't have that kavana, it's tasteless. That's the Musa Haskel from the Chofetz Chaim. The Mefarshim asked on this question, on the Chofetz Chaim, but the Pasuk says, V'kizera gad, V'ta'amoy kitzapiches bedvash. It was like a wafer dipped in honey. So it did have a taste. So how could you say that it was tasteless? So the answer is, very interesting answer. The answer is, if you had kavana, I want to taste mon, then it tasted like a delicious wafer covered with honey. So mon has a taste. If you want, the man can taste like a piece of meat. You have to have kavana, it should taste like meat. But if you have kavana, I'm having kavana that the man should taste like man, then it tasted like a zeragad v'tamoy kitzapichis midvash. But if you didn't even have that kavana, you just took the man and you put it in your mouth and you didn't even have kavana that it should taste like man, it was tasteless. Okay, so it's not a kasha. The Chofetz Chaim is the Mordechai Yisoid, you saw it, that the man was literally, it was tofel, it was literally tasteless. If you had kavana, then it should taste like man. What is man? Man is man, whatever man is. It tasted like man. If you have no kavana, it tastes like nothing. Okay, what color was the man? the color of the mon was white. It says that it was kizera gad. It says that it was love. It says it was love and it was white. So some learn a tremendous. They put out this a whole. You can knock out a business, a whole $1 million industry. Is that why do we cover our chalos on Shabbos? On Shabbos we have lechem mishnah. Okay, the lechem mishnah is also zecher leman because on Friday Hashem gave us a double portion and on Shabbos there was nothing. So in order to demonstrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a double portion of man on Friday, we have lechem mishnah, and because the lechem mishnah is zecher leman, we cover the lechem mishnah on top and below. Top and below, as a zecher, that there was tal. It was individually wrapped. Every piece of bread came with its own wrapper. There was tal lamata, tal lamala. It was munach bekuspa. It was like put into its own little covering, own little container. It was sheltered. Therefore, zecher for the it was sheltered. We cover the challah below with a challah board, or some said the tablecloth is enough. The tablecloth, even if you put it on the table itself, that's enough. And then on top, you put a covering. We cover the challah. That's one of the reasons why we cover the challah. We don't only cover the challah in order not to embarrass the wine, but we cover the challah because the challah is zecher leman, and the man was covered lemala ulamata. The lamay nafkamina. Some are of the opinion that because it's zecher leman, you should keep the challah covered until you finish making the birchas hamoitzi. When you say this, some of you know some of the minhag, when they make the birchas hamoitzi, they pick up, the challah is covered, they put their hand underneath, or even underneath, they have even like a napkin underneath, and on top there's the covering, it's covered, and while the challah is covered, they recite the birchas hamoitzi, and then they uncover it. Why? Because since the man is zecher, the challah zecher leman, and the man was covered lemala ulamata, so when you're making the bracha, hamitzi lecha min haaretz, which is a bracha on the zecher for the man, it should be doimet to the man and have it covered lemala ulamata.
By night or by day?
Both, by night and day.
So by night
there was no man by day either. The man was on Friday. There was mon. The reason why we take lech Shabbos, there was nothing. There was no mon that Friday night, that day. But Hashem gave us a double portion on Friday.
Yeah, but the portion on Friday would have been enough for Friday night.
And for Shabbos day. Okay, that's a whole calculation.
You got an extra portion for Shabbos day.
Right.
You got on Friday enough mon for Friday and for the whole Shabbos.
But you didn't get the extra for Friday night. I mean, you.
So you say that you don't need any way you get for Friday. Friday includes Friday morning and Friday night. So anyway, that's not called extra. Oh, but you got another portion for Shabbos day and from Olav HaMalka. You have to have three sudas. Okay, it's a whole calculation. There are many interpretations of what it means. Whatever it means, but the point is that on Friday you got double. In order to demonstrate that you got double on Friday and Shabbos is sacred, you get nothing, so we take on Friday double. Because it demonstrates that on Shabbos we got nothing, and on Friday we got double, because Shabbos is sacred, and because it's sacred, Hashem didn't send down man. It's a day of rest. And instead Hashem prepared for us by giving us double on Friday. So it's a demonstration of the man. When you make the bracha, hamaitzi, you're making a bracha on Makir, the miracle of the man, that we did not get man on Shabbos, and we got a double portion on Friday, and the whole week we got just a single portion. We demonstrate that we make a bracha on the miracle, and therefore, if it's in order to show, number one, it's going to be double. Number two, we also cover it, somehow this custom, not everyone, is to keep it covered, lamala ulamata, at the time that you recite the bracha samoitzi. Some go even further, and they're makbid, that their challah covering should be white. Not just on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Now, Yom Kippur, you don't eat bread, I'm sorry. Not just on Rosh Hashanah. But it should be white the whole year. The challah covering. Because the challah covering against Zecher, for the only reason why there is a challah covering is Zecher Lemon. And the Pasuk tells us in one place that the man was white.
So why don't they get white collar?
Want to have white challah? You can't have, what do you mean white challah? How do you make white challah? It's like white chocolate? How do you make white challah? Challah is challah. But the covering should be white. Not everyone agrees with this. Most people have at home, they have these very fancy challah coverings that are all different multicolored. But there is such a custom that some people do adhere to, is that the covering should always be white. L'chol eis, yiyu bigodecha levonim. It should be white. Okay, next interesting topic that is discussed a little before Shema can dwell on is what happens if a person ate mon and had kavana. You know, I always pass McDonald's. I'm very curious, what does a cheeseburger taste like? Basar b'chalaf. If a person would have kavana that the mon should taste like basar b'chalaf, or to taste like chazer, or to taste like non-kosher fish, or non-kosher birds, would that kavana work? This is a hashkafic concept. This is, it seems like a very simple question. We know, Chazal tell us, any flavor that you wished, you got. I wanted to taste like meat, it tasted like meat. I wanted to taste like Cheerios. It tasted just like Cheerios and milk. But what happens if you want it to taste like something that the Torah says is forbidden? Shiratzen. What? Oh, Meir's very good question. How would you even know? So let's say a person was choyze b'shuva. I know what it was like. Once upon a time, he wasn't religious. A person who, or... But let me ask you a question. A person in his whole life could never afford to have meat. And now he gets mun. So he asks, I wanted to taste like... What was I missing out on my whole life? I never had meat. In Egypt, it was normally very poor.
Isn't there a concept that everything that's trade there is a correspondence?
Okay, you're saying very good. So Heshi is saying a very powerful yisoid is that is that yes, because since Hashem, anything that Hashem prohibited to us in one area, there is a corresponding item that has exactly the same taste and is permitted. Basa b'chalav is also about kachal. The order of the animal. The order of the animal is kosher. Just kosher it. But the order of the animal is saturated in milk because it's producing milk. So the Gemara says there's a way to kosher it, but at the end of the day, you're going to taste the flavor. You're going to taste the flavor of basar b'chalav when you eat kachal. So Heshi is saying that it's not a problem. There's no such flavor in this world that is forbidden. No such thing. The Chazal Sefer is called Milso, the Amar Rahman is also B'mokim Zeh, who was Matim, B'mokim Acher. The Gemara gives you a whole long list of examples. Chazer, Shibuta, the brain of the Shibuta fish has the identical flavor of Chazer. So everything is mutter. So when the person asks Kavana, I wanted to taste like Chazer, there's nothing wrong with the flavor of Chazer, the Haraya, there are other equivalent things. So therefore, you... Exactly, artificial flavors. But you don't even need artificial, there's even real flavor. Chazal say, even forget it, artificial. There is the real flavor of anything that you can find in this world that is usur. There is somewhere in this world that exact same sensation flavor in the davar hamutar. So therefore, if a person says, I want to have the flavor of chazer, there's nothing wrong. Chazer is mutter. The flavor of chazer is mutter. It's found in a certain type of fish, and the brain of a certain type of fish has the identical flavor. Chazer, so therefore, if a person would want to say, I want to taste the flavor of chazer, you're doing absolutely nothing wrong. This is a very good answer to this question. It would definitely work, because there's really nothing wrong with the flavor. However, others will say no. Others will say, the bottom line is, you want to taste chazer. You're asking Hashem to do something awesome. Is that possible? Well, Hashem told us in this world, let's say, don't engage in Gili Arayos. And if you engage in Gili Arayos, you're going to produce Mamzerin. And a Mamzer is a nightmare. Mamzer can't marry anyone. It's a miserable existence. If a person goes and violates Hashem's will and he lives with an Eshes Ish, she gets pregnant. What, Hashem's going to kill the baby? Hashem is going to be there, and the baby's going to develop, and the baby's going to have siyata d'shmaya. Chazal say, a mamzer talmud chacham comes before a kohen gadol am haaretz. So, but you violated Hashem's command. So what? Even though you violate Hashem's command, Hashem is always there with you. Hashem is always there with you, which would seem to indicate that if a person says, Ribbono shel Olam, you gave us this thing called man. and you created it in such a way, it's a ruchni, it's something that davar ruchni, and you said that if you have kavana, whatever you want, Hashem is giving man a license to have kavana that it should be chazer. That's all part of free will. It's part of free will. Hashem allows men, and that's part of your free will. Your free will, every time you take in your possession man, there's no guarantees. You could abuse it. You could, like today you can have a telephone, okay? So you can use telephone for a davar shebe kedusha to learn Torah, and you can use a telephone to speak Lashon Hara. A computer, obviously, you can use for dvarim, holy things, and you can abuse it. You can use it for terrible things. Everything in the world is like this, and it's no different in the world of Ruchnias. Hashem gave you the man, you now have free will. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to use it to go taste basa b'chalav, chazer, shiratzim, curiosity? Look, it's so easy. It's so easy. The curiosity, it's so easy. You know, think about the internet. Okay? A person can see with his eyes on the internet more in 5 minutes, dvarim ho'asurim, more than our great-grandparents can possibly see in multiple lifetimes. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's accessible. It's available. That's why the nisoyon is so great, because it's right in front of you. It's not easy to go buy chazer. If you're living in a Jewish community, you're living in Bnei Barak, it's not easy to buy pig meat. It's not so easy to go buy shiratzim. Where are you going to go? You're going to have to go get on a bus and go to a different neighborhood to go buy non-kosher food. In Bnei Barak, everything is kosher. It's not so easy to go find non-kosher food. It's going to take you. Okay, you know what I mean. You know what I mean. It's not so easy. It's not accessible. But in New York, it's very easy. You just go out on the street. It's very easy. There's a much greater Nisayan. Okay, the computers, it's very easy to do Averis on computers. The Mon was a very big Nisayan. Vayanecha vayariveko. I always forget it. Yes, it's vayariveko, vayariveko. I always forget this. A mental block. Vayariveko. I think it's very chof, right? With a chof, not a. It can never, ever. Certain things in life, I can never convince myself. And I confuse them now. I confuse the master. I confuse the master himself. So it says in the pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he tortured us. What's the torture? What is the torture? Vayanecha means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, vayachilcha es hamon asher lo yodata velo yodun avosecha miyoyim. What's the torture? Adarab, this is Gan Eden. Our parents had a slave away, go out to the field and dig and produce and do all the 13 melachos to produce a piece of bread. Here you're a spoiled brat. You wake up in the morning, and in front of your front door, there's a New York Times and the Mon. You take in the New York Times and you take in the Mon for breakfast. Could you imagine everything when we wake up in the morning? There's the New York Times and it's breakfast, a delicious breakfast in front of you. Our grandparents had to go slave away in the sweltering heat and weed, plant, harvest, winnow, crush, sift, bake, v'chul, v'chul, the 13 melachas. You wake up in the morning, here you go, New York Times, Mishpacha magazine, and breakfast served. Unbelievable! That you call torture? That you call torture, v'ye'anecha? That's Gan Eden. Not so easy. Our grandparents, if they wanted to eat chazer, if they wanted to eat shirotzim, they want to eat non-kosher birds, non-kosher fish. It wasn't so easy. It was very, very hard. It took a lot of work. And if he did it once, he wouldn't do it again. Here, every single day, there's no filter. There's no filter. You get mon every day. There's no technology. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do to filter the man. It's all you got to do is say, you know, I always wanted to know, what does it taste like? That pizza, that non-kosher pizza. What does it taste like? That tray for pizza, they put some meat. Just think it. And you got it. Just think about chazer, shirotzim. Just think about it. Oh, you can't deal with the nisoyin every day. Too much to deal with. So go and get a filter. Okay, what's the filter called? Gentech. No, I have Gentech. I have Gentech, and I have another one also. But what is the organization called?
Oh.
How can I forget the organization that what are they called? I forgot what they're called. So just put on a filter. Oh, I don't have to have worry about my machshavas. It can't happen. There is no filter. There's no such thing. Who is preventing you from having that machshava that it should taste like tarfus? For 40 years, every single day, you're challenging yourself. No one is watching. No one knows. It looks the same to everyone. No one knows what it tastes like to you. It's in your mind. You had to discipline yourself every single day not to have a machshava ra'ah that no one in the world would know about other than you. Could you imagine that, Nisoyim? It's unbelievable. A person has a computer, right? Go into the basement. No one is watching. You can watch any movie you want. Go watch anything that you want. No one is watching. So today, Baruch Hashem, there is amazing technology. Those who want to take advantage can take advantage. Those who don't want to, no, you can't stop anyone. But if a person wants just to take advantage, there is amazing technology that didn't exist 10 years ago where you can really protect yourself and there's no more nisyonos. No nisyonos. There's nothing you can do about it. It's an old mamish impossible. So you take away the nisayon. Wonderful. And that's what we really do. V'lo lidei nisayon, v'lo lidei v'zayon. We don't need the nisayonos. We're not interested. Set up a situation where there's no nisayonos. You're good to go. The man was much, but the man, there was no way you can take away the nisayon. There's no technology where you can prevent yourself, where you can prevent yourself at a weak moment from not having a machshava of a nakush. There's no such thing. There's no technique. There's no technology. And no one's going to ever know because the mon look the same. It's only a question of what did it taste like. Only you know what you're tasting. No one in the world knows what it tastes like. To go through such a challenge every day in your life, could you imagine what that's like? It can drive you mad. How many people can survive the nisyonos? I'll say, who's interested in crab, lobster, in cheeseburgers? Who's interested in all these things? Well, to us, we may think we're not interested because we don't have these nisyonos. Because to us, these things are so far removed from us. We've killed the nisyon, so it's not a big deal. But we do understand that when it comes to other matters of the computer, it's a problem. We know it's a problem. We do know this. So that's how we go when you protect yourself. But they couldn't protect themselves here. And they were challenged. And no one would know. It's mamish. No one's watching. Only Hashem is watching. It's mamish. Vaya'anecha, vaya'arivecha, vaya'achilcha, es hamon asher lo yadat v'lo yidun avasecha. The nisoyin of the mon is something that's beyond our comprehension. Okay, on the other hand, maybe you want to say, is that no? That this dover ruchni, it was impossible for it to taste like a dover ha'aser. Okay, that's a cop-out. Okay, life is so easy. Impossible. A dover ruchni, if you have a machshava that it should taste like chazer, You can have a machshava all you want that if it tastes like chazer, it cannot possibly turn into chazer. Okay, some would argue that, yeah?
If you are eating, let's say, this artificial meat that is kosher,
okay,
and it tastes like chazer.
Mutar lechatchila.
Okay, so why should
we... That's what Heshi gave. Heshi gave that answer. Heshi said, the first answer that we gave was, there is no such thing in this world as flavor that is osir. And Chazal go out of the way to say that chazer is mutter elsewhere. The shibuta in the moach, the shibuta. There's a fish.
If someone has a genetic nerve defect, that everything tastes in life.
All right, that's an exception. That's an exception. Let's not to so that.
Someone is diabetic and he ate them, and he wanted a sugar.
There were no cholim in the midbar. In the midbar, there were no cholim. That's an exception. So it's exactly what Heshi said. Heshi said is that flavor, there is no such thing in the world as forbidden flavor. And the proof is, Chazal say, chazir is osir. But if you really want to know what it tastes, the chazer tastes like, there is a fish called shibuta. It has a brain. Eat the brain. When you eat the brain, it is equivalent to eating a luscious piece of chazer. So what do you learn from this Maamar Chazal? Every single flavor in this world is permitted. The Torah forbids us to derive this benefit, this sensation, when it comes from this specific animal. The man is not chazer. So if you want the mun to taste like chazer, it is no different than wanting than eating the moach, the shibuta. And therefore, gesunde hate. That's what Heshi suggested. Excellent. That's one mahalach. Some don't want to go with that mahalach. Some say no. Moach de shibuta, fine, is moach. But put that answer aside. Chazer is chazer. Chazer is aser. I have in front of me mun. I want to taste. What is chazer? I always wondered. I always saw the commercials for chazer. Okay, I used to go by the B68 for years, Tor HaVadas, and the bus stop to go back from Tor HaVadas to down was in front of a non-kosher pizza shop, and the aroma was delicious. Delicious. And it was everything in there was 100% treif. Basa b'cholav, and you can imagine what they served in there. What does it taste like? Okay, it tastes delicious. Rav David.
You have another point you made against. You just said a point against what you said. Because basa b'cholav, the taste of basa, there's no
issue. You're getting into technicalities. The bottom line is when you cook them together, it is a forbidden flavor. I don't know how to define it, but if you have in front of you mun and you want to have that sensation, that our second answer is in a chinami, your machshava, this is the nesoyim. It's taka osur. If the Torah said basa b'cholav is osur, it's not in the spirit of the law, in this approach. Okay, we're going now to a different approach. It is not in the spirit of the law for you to take a piece of man and to be mechashev. I want to taste chazer. I want to taste basa b'cholav. The Torah said that it's osur. Don't have chazer, don't have basa b'cholav, don't eat shiratzim, don't have non-kosher birds, don't eat non-kosher fish. I want to know what it tastes like. I want to have kavan. I want to go eat crab. I want to eat lobster. I want it. What?
There's a
possible what?
The kalem. You're cooking.
No, impossible. Impossible. I'm assuming it's impossible. So this is an incredible nesoyan. An incredible nesoyan, because all you need to do is think. And whatever your wish is, it happens. And there's nothing you can do to prevent it from happening other than control your machshavas.
But if you haven't experienced the taste, then how do you...
So first of all, who says that Jews did not experience it in Egypt? It was before Matan Torah. Who says they didn't experience it? And now they got the Torah and right away, 40 days after they left, 50 days after they left Mitzrayim, who says they didn't know from these things? Maybe they didn't know from these things. Or maybe even if they didn't know from these things, Adrabah, I'm curious to know what it tastes like. I saw a commercial for a Big Mac. I'm driving down the highway in the desert. We see there's a McDonald's, a Burger King advertisement. I'm curious. These are all mysterious questions. These are all, there are really no answers to these questions. But let's talk theoretical. Theoretically speaking, let's assume the very, very worst. The very, very worst. Even though I didn't experience it, I know such a thing exists. And I'm curious, what does... It can't be if the whole world is eating basar b'chalav. It's got to be good. You can't say that it's no good. There's got to be something to it. The whole world, if the whole world eats lobster, if the whole world eats all this type of stuff, it must be that it's good. Don't say that it's disgusting. Adarabba, it's not disgusting, it's delicious. But the Torah says don't do it. So now, if you're a healthy human being, you're curious. And I want to know what it tastes like. I want to know, a healthy human being who sees the goyim do something, I'm curious, what does it taste like? Basar b'chalav, what does lobster taste like? If the ganze welt is a $1 billion industry, are people engaging in this? It must be interesting. What does it taste like? So, it's awesome. Okay, so if you live in a society like we have today, Baruch Hashem in Flatbush, there's no nisayon. Because there's no caterer that's going to serve you lobster. There's no store in Avenue M that's going to serve you lobster. No one's going to do it. You're going to ruin all your shidduchim. No one's going to go walk into a geisha store. It's not going to happen. So there's no nisayon. In the mind, it's dead. It's dead. The whole issue is dead. But if you have in front of you chomer, spiritual matter, and whatever machshav enters your mind, that's what it tastes like. And there's no one in the whole world that can detect this, because it doesn't change in appearance. It only changes in sensation, flavor. And no one in the world knows what's going on in your mind. And it's much better than the internet, because the internet, every mayor will tell you in very great detail that every keystroke you press on your computer is recorded by somebody. And if they want to know what you're pressing on your computer, no matter how many filters you have, no matter how many VPNs you're behind, there's someone watching. But when it came to the mon, there's no government, no technology in the world that can detect that you are enjoying a luscious piece of basar b'chalav. Who's going to stop you? And there's nothing you can do to shut down the nisayon. You got a problem with alcohol? So go to a city where they don't sell alcohol. Prohibition. Yeah. Go to a place where it's not available. It's not available. It's not available. Well, you're not going to eat? You got to eat. There's no way you could avoid the nisayon. And you have to deal with this nisayon for 40 years every single day. That's an experience. That's a battle. That is a real battle, and that's called Vayyanecha. Hashem, He tortured you. He tortured you in a good way. You only grow from nisyonos. A person only grows from being challenged. You sit back and do nothing, you just wither away. Challenges is what makes a person develop and grow. Okay, let's go to another idea. Another idea I saw, I felt very interesting about the mon. The mon started out as big. What was the mon? Oh, it's already 12 o'clock. Gewalt. Gewalt. Okay, we have to just do one or two very quickly. The mon was an oimer la gulgoyles. The Rosh Habayis every day went out hunting for mon. Let's say he has 12 children. So how many portions? 14 portions. He has 12 children. Each child gets an omer. Lemispar, it says lagul goyles, and himself and his wife. So he and his wife is 12 children is another 12, 14 portions. Pretty good. Now, make believe this man is 400 pounds. There had to be big people out there, right? You have to say there were some very large people. How much mon did he get? He got one omer. How much is an omer? It's quite a lot. It's equal to 43 eggs and 2/5 of an egg. Could you imagine if they had to pay for it in the 21st century? Eggs are very expensive. Eggs cost how much now? A dozen? $4 or $5. That's highway robbery. Mamish highway robbery. It's not to be believed what's going on. Unbelievable what's going on. Okay, so 43 eggs and 2/5 of an egg. That's a lot. Tell me, every person needs so much mon a day? Two meals? You really need all that?
You had to carry it around all day?
No.
You bring it home. You got to bring it home. Was it heavy? Maybe it was heavy. You got to go out. If you had 12 children, so you got to go out every morning after davening. You got to go out into the field and find it. And bring home into the house 14 measures. That's 14 times 43 and 0.2. That's a lot. You need a station wagon. You need a truck. Ach, weisnish, fine. That's not the point. It's not how much you weight. How much did you eat? It's a pella.
It's a volume.
But something doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. A child doesn't need all that much. Why is it why is it the same exact measure for a child and for an adult? An adult doesn't seem to need so much. Certainly a child doesn't need to seem to need that much. How could it be that an infant gets an entire oimer? It says in the pasuk, lemispar nafshei sechem or legul giloisam, every skull, every person gets that exact amount. It's a pella. There are a lot of mysteries about them that we do not know, but on one, it doesn't answer the question one bit at all. But Rabbi Felder has a very lamish chapter on this, and he says in tremendous chiddush. He says the Gemara talks about in Masechet Pesachim about if you do a bedikas chametz, and then a mouse comes in with bread. Look at that, a mouse walks into the house with a loaf. You did a bedikas chametz. The house is spick and span. And then you see on the floor, there's a mouse crawling on the floor, holding a slice of bread. Gewalt, I cleaned the whole house. And then you chase after the mouse, and he goes into the wall, into a hole, and you can't find him. So you go and you break down the wall, and after a long search, you find the slice of bread. Can you assume that the bread that you saw the mouse bring into the house is the complete piece of bread? Yes, because mice do not crumble. Mice are very neat, they have very good manners. They use utensils. They're very, they know how adequate, proper, very, very well trained mice. Let's say you see a toddler walk into the house, crawl into the room with a loaf of bread or piece of bread. And then you run after him, and you find half of the bread. So you are, and you see him eating. So I could assume that the child, he ate up half of the slice of bread, and the other slice is in his hands. The Gemara says no. You assume nothing. Derech, it is the derech of a child, liforer, to crumble. If a child comes into a room and he has in his hand a slice of bread, and then 5 minutes later he has in his hand a half a slice of bread, and you see him nibbling on something, you cannot assume that he swallowed a half a loaf of bread, and whatever he has in his hand is the leftover, and there are no crumbs anywhere in the house. Because it is the human condition. Children, they waste. Derech tinoikos gemara liforer. It is the way of children to crumble and to waste bread. You ever go to a dining room, you have an elementary school, you see the children have their bread, you give them bread, and you see they only eat the middle of the bread, and the crust is lying all on the floor or lying on the table, or vice versa. I once someone told me there was a certain rebbe. He couldn't deal with this. Imamish, he saw a kid take bread, and he took out the middle, the soft part, and he left over the crust. He called up his parents, and the parents thought that the Rebbe is calling to tell them that the kid is expelled from the yeshiva. He committed murder. I have bad news. His child, he did something, we have to talk about this. And the parents really, really thought that the Rebbe is calling up to say that the kid committed murder and they're throwing him out of the yeshiva. And the parents are bracing themselves, oh no, what did our little Kaddishal do? At lunch, he took the middle of the slice of bread and he ate it, and he discarded the crust. That was the crime. This Rebbe was an old-timer who knew what it was like to starve, probably maybe a Holocaust survivor. He could not deal with a child wasting food. But the Gemara says, derech tinoikos leforer. It is the derech of a child to crumble the food and waste the food. So by Ferrer, he explains, Rabbi Felder, he explains, that's Pella what he says. It doesn't answer the question entirely, but the reason why children and adults got the same amount to a degree is because built into giving a child food is you give him a larger portion than what he needs to eat, because it is inevitable, it is human nature for a child to waste part of the food that you give him. And that's acceptable, Pella, acceptable. And he goes so far to say, Chiddush LaHalacha, Truma, Truma, are you allowed to feed a child Truma? Because it's inevitable, if you give him a loaf of bread, a Truma, a child is a Kohen, Truma, the child's going to waste half the loaf of bread. He's going to waste, Lafar, he's going to waste it. So does that mean you're not allowed to give the child? Because it's inevitable that you give a little kid some bread, he's going to take some of the bread, he's going to throw it on the floor, he'll eat, yeah, he's hungry, he's going to eat. But he doesn't appreciate the value of food, he doesn't appreciate, he's not yet mature enough. And it's inevitable, he's going to take some of the food you give, he's going to waste it. So by definition, you have to give him more to take into account waste. And the answer is, he suggests, he cites sources, it's mutter. Built into feeding children food, the halacha accepts that it's human nature for children to waste, but children need to be fed, and you can't hold a child accountable to eat bidiyuk every single crumb, like adults do, and not waste one mashahu, derech, tinoik, it's a gemara lefarer. And that, to a small degree, lessens the tamia. Why is it that children receive the same portion as adults? Children don't need as much. They're smaller bodies. No, although they don't need as much, but the children, they're not mature enough to appreciate what they've been given, and they're going to waste part of it. And this is a concept in general management. If you try to optimize too much, you're going to destroy the business. Sometimes you have a business, and we're wasting money. Why? I'll give you marshals. Is why in the Beis HaKisa, I'm not joking with this, we're not going to spend any more in the company $300 a year to buy toilet paper. Let everyone bring their own. Okay? They do that in some companies. We can save $300 a year. Bring your own. When you start behaving like that to your employees, and you start nickel someone, you know what happens? The environment becomes so nasty, so cheap, and so stingy. You know what? Who wants to work here? And by saving yourself $300, you end up losing $1 million. You have talent, and you have people that are productive and are loyal, and when you start being mocked on every nickel and dime, you know what? Who wants to work in this crazy place? And before you turn around, the bottom line, you made $1 million less this year for a $300 investment of allowing there to be a degree of waste. You can't make private phone calls. Okay, now it doesn't make it narrowing anyway. It's unlimited. Every phone call costs a dime. When you start behaving, turn off the lights. When you walk out, turn off the lights. When you have that kind of attitude, you destroy yourself. That same principle is demonstrated in the mon. Waste. Children need to waste. It's a reality. What?
The children eat machshava to taste. They didn't know what the food tasted
like. Maybe if I don't know. Yes, no, there are a lot of mysteries about this. I don't know. But there is such a principle. There's a very big question. Why did the children get the same amount of mon as the adults? There is no real answer to this question. There is no real satisfying answer. This is just a small concept of that a Gemara Masechet Pesachim, Derech Tinoikos Leforer. This is a reality. How far do you take this reality in halacha, in giving a child teruma, when you know some of that teruma is going to be destroyed? And you're not allowed to destroy teruma, but you're allowed to feed teruma to a child. You're not allowed to destroy. But when I give it to the child, he's going to destroy part of it, because that's what children do. So the answer is, derech tinoikos leforer. So that's how they eat. The way they eat is they waste part of it. It's a reality in the way they eat. Mon, do you apply the same thing? I don't know what the answer is, but there is another question. Why are they getting the same large portion, an adult-sized portion, when they don't need it? Okay, there's a lot more, but may this be a zuchus to appreciate the depth of the mon, and everyone should be zoiche to a shefa of parnasa and bracha in Ruchnius and Gashmius.